This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, remember President Obama's pen and phone? Well, just how many executive orders has he issued, and can President-elect Donald Trump undo these orders? David Christensen, Vice President of Government Affairs, is here for that conversation. Also, names are being floated for key cabinet posts as President-elect Donald Trump meets with his team in New York City. Some of these names are coming out of that meeting, some names coming from elsewhere. One name being floated for Secretary of State has some national security experts concerned. Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin is here with more on that story. And those anti-Trump protesters, you know, those things that got is popping up everywhere. Well, it appears it may not be as organic as some would like you to believe. In fact, it appears some of them are on the payroll of Planned Parenthood. We'll talk about it with Penny Nance, president of Concerned Women for America. And could Congress be gearing up for another fight over religious freedom in the military? We're expecting Oklahoma Congressman Steve Russell to stop by with the latest on that. The website, TonyPerkins.com. And if you're on Twitter, it's at T. Perkins. Okay. As of this past Tuesday, President Obama has issued nearly 200 executive orders. He's been busy. In fact, I got a clip for you. You might remember this. Remember the president when he was talking? He didn't get his way. He was kind of throwing a tantrum, and he said how he could do it. Remember this here? Listen to this.
I've got a pen, and I've got a phone. And I can use that pen to sign executive orders and take executive actions and administrative actions that move the ball forward. In helping to make sure our kids are getting the best education possible, making sure that our businesses are getting the kind of support and help they need to grow and advance, to make sure that people are getting the skills that they need to get those jobs that our businesses are creating. And I've got a phone that allows me to convene Americans from every walk of life, nonprofits, businesses, the private sector, universities, to try to bring more and more Americans together around what I think is a unifying theme, making sure that this is a country where if you work hard, you can make it.
Well, apparently that was an Obama phone. Didn't work so well for the election. It wasn't able to pull everybody together for Hillary Clinton. But he has used that pen and phone fairly successfully with his executive orders. But it could be that those executive orders written with that pen were maybe that was erasable ink. Because it sounds like Donald Trump is pledging to reverse most of these executive orders. Joining me to talk about that, David Christensen, Vice President of Government Affairs here at the Family Research Council. David, welcome back.
Thanks, Tony.
The president-elect Donald Trump has said he's going to reverse these. But before we get into that and what he may or may not do with these executive orders, let's talk a little bit about what these executive orders cover, almost 200 of them that the president has done. Others have been by a directive within the agencies, the Federal Registry. There's like 198 presidential memoranda, which carry the same legal force as an executive order. So you know, roughly 400. But let's talk a little bit about the subject matter of these executive orders.
Well, a lot of the executive orders, some of them are just directing agencies to adhere to certain laws that are already on the books, the changes in policy that the administration has discretion. President Obama has taken it to an entirely new level, frankly, some would say lawless level, where he's legislating from the executive branch. We've heard complaints about EPA, executive orders related to EPA, amnesty, couldn't get through certain immigration laws through Congress and decided just to pick up the pen and write an executive order. And of course, that's being challenged. On our issues, the issues of values, faith, family, freedom, there's a number of executive orders that he's issued. Everything from, a sham executive order actually trying to provide cover on Obamacare, as it relates to abortion funding, to executive orders. He rescinded the Mexico City policy that was preventing federal funds for abortion overseas. And then there's a whole host of agency actions, regulations related to conscience protections, redefining current laws on conscience as it relates to pro-life healthcare entities, One of the really troubling areas of executive action has been to redefine sex to include sexual orientation and gender identity. So where the laws under Title IX say that, you know, schools, et cetera, cannot engage in sex discrimination, originally designed to protect women from discrimination, now the administration's redefining that to include the LGBT agenda. It's not on the books. It's not in the law. But he's just creating these whole cloth and obviously for his political agenda. So now there's threat for healthcare providers that are federally regulated to engage in hormone therapy or sex change operations against their conscience. Schools regarding bathrooms and showers, you know, allowing biological boys and women's restrooms and showers. It's
all by executive order.
Executive order agency. He just tells the agency to put something out. They put it out, and there's no legal basis for much of this.
And that can be undone by President-elect Trump once he's in office.
Absolutely. The President-elect Trump can rescind those executive orders. They can direct the agencies to rescind regulations that have been promulgated. I mean, remember the whole Hobby Lobby case, the HHS mandate that led to the win in Hobby Lobby, but the ongoing litigation regarding the Little Sisters of the Poor, mandating that the Little Sisters who help, you know, their charity of nuns, to pay for contraceptives, including abortifacient drugs. It's insane. But that's the way this administration has worked.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Wednesday afternoon. David Christensen, Vice President of Government Affairs here at the Family Research Council. We're discussing executive orders by President Obama, about 200 of them. And there's other ones, like, for instance, he undid George Bush's certification of UNFPA's involvement in China's forced abortion campaign, basically saying we're not going to fund the UNFPA, as United Nations Family Planning. We're not going to give them money because they're a part of this forced abortion, you know, one-child policy in China. President Obama reversed that.
Yeah, this is astonishing. I remember when he reversed this in 2009. Hillary Clinton went to China in 2009 to, you know, said that economic rights trump human rights. She was right. So UNFPA funds China's family planning program, wherein women and families, married couples, are not allowed to have more than one child. That's been changed now to two children.
So indirectly, it's United States taxpayer money going to fund that one-child
right.
policy in China.
Yeah. Women, people are fined if they have more than one kid. In some cases, they're forced to engage, have an abortion. Imagine a woman who's being held down and forced.
And we have this epidemic of abandoned children in China, too, because parents, they get a baby girl and they just get rid of it.
Right, because they want to have a boy and they can't have more than one child, so they get rid of the girl and then, you know, they want to have a boy because of gender selection
right.
issues. So this administration has been – we've been funding the UNFPA, which basically works hand in glove with China's coercive policies. It's an abuse that we shouldn't even be remotely engaged in.
And that was by executive order. Also, President Clinton – Go back to the first George Bush. There was – well, go back before that. It was Ronald Reagan. There was a Title X funding
right.
rule that made sure that organizations like Planned Parenthood could not do abortions and family planning under the same roof.
Right.
Because technically it has been that a group that does family planning could not have any money as it pertains to the abortion side of their business.
Right.
So there was a wall of separation where you had to be in a different facility.
Right.
That was undone by Bill Clinton.
That's correct.
I remember having a conversation with the Bush administration, the chief of staff in the Bush and the George W. Bush administration, on a sat phone as I was in Honduras on a mission trip almost toward the end of his administration, simply trying to get them to reinstate that line of division, that firewall, and they wouldn't do it. They were afraid to do it. So that's been continued under the Obama administration. That can be undone by the Trump administration. So
there is this firewall of separation. But, of course, we want to go beyond that. We want to see Planned Parenthood defunded altogether.
Right, exactly. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, the family planning program, Title 10 of the family planning program, was signed into law of all people by Richard Nixon. And it was part of the whole population control crowd and the ideology there. And so the law, the statute says that abortion is not a method of family planning. So we're supposed to fund family planning to help women from getting pregnant if that's their choice. But we're not supposed to have abortion as part of that. Well, Ronald Reagan had to implement regulation, preventing and keeping abortion separate from the family planning, the federally funded family planning services. Clinton undid that and put in an abortion referral requirement. So there's no pro-life entities that are getting family planning money, which is why Planned Parenthood gets so much money. Donald Trump could change
well,
that.
Well, and along those lines, Barack Obama also did an executive order that forced states to fund Planned Parenthood with Title 10 funding.
Absolutely. This is a new regulation that came out a couple months ago. We provided public comments to the administration, the agency. They're not going to listen to us. Basically saying states, you don't have a right. If you get federal funds, family planning funds, and you're redirecting it to clinics that provide a broad array of services for women, including family planning, the administration's saying, no, we're going to pull back your funds because we really want you to fund providers that engage in abortion practices.
I mean, the list is quite extensive of the executive orders, and most of these are issues which the president would not have been successful in going through Congress. He would have not been able to get these measures through Congress.
Yeah, there's no way. I mean, look, if he had wanted to get it through Congress, he had the first 2 years of the administration where you had a Democrat-controlled House and a Democrat-controlled Senate. They didn't do it through Congress then. And obviously, the Republicans took over the House in 2010. The administration has just over the last 8 years been just unloading executive order, regulation, guidance documents, legal interpretations. They legalized internet gambling just by a Department of Justice letter, a memo saying, well, we're going to reinterpret the Wire Act, which was supposed to ban internet gambling. So all kinds of things people...
Well, like we worked during the Bush administration to prohibit the funding of embryo destruction through stem cell research.
Right.
But by executive order, Barack Obama put that back in place.
That's right. They rescinded Bush's policies. They decided instead of putting money to ethical and effective treatments, regenerative medicine that were proving to... help patients with Parkinson's, with spinal cord injury, with heart disease, you name it. They turn money and a lot of that money back to embryonic stem cell research that destroys human embryos, hasn't treated anybody.
Finally, we're up against a break, but I mean, also, I mean, he had memorandums directing U.S. diplomats to promote the LGBT agenda.
Right.
I mean, he was using his office to tell people to do this stuff.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, you have a country like Kenya, you have other countries that have human rights issues that they're struggling with in the context of ISIS, terrorism, Nigeria, and the diplomats are showing up and talking about LGBT rights rather than fundamental human rights to protect the lives of people. And they don't want to pass a directive calling out genocide when it is genocide.
Incredible what the president has been doing with his pen. But as I said, we may find out if that's erasable ink because Donald Trump will have the opportunity to rescind those. David Christensen, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for being with you, Tony.
All right, folks, don't go away. Those protesters, anti-Trump protesters, not so organic as they would like you to believe. It looks like they're on someone's payroll. We're going to talk about that when we return. Don't go away.
We all know what it feels like. We try to avoid it. Experts define it as an unpleasant sensory and emotional experience associated with actual or potential tissue damage, or describes in terms of such damage. What is it? It's pain. Did you realize that you probably started feeling pain at a very young age, or even before you were born? Scientific studies have increased our knowledge of life inside the womb. We now have strong evidence that unborn babies can feel pain by 20 weeks or earlier. At Family Research Council, we believe that all babies are worth protecting. We also hope that even those who don't share our pro-life commitment will listen to the medical community and support laws that protect the unborn child from cruel suffering. For more information, visit frc.org/fetalpain. That is frc.org/fetalpain.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. Last week, Colorado voters overwhelmingly legalized euthanasia. As opponents of the proposal warned, this law will make it too easy for big healthcare companies to financially exploit assisted suicide. That's already taking place in other states where physician-assisted suicide is legal, as insurance companies deny medical treatments but cover the cost of suicide drugs. In God's design, each of us begins life dependent on our parents and often end life dependent on our children. From beginning of life to its natural God-ordained end, this care we give one another teaches us of the intrinsic value of every person. Yet euthanasia laws such as this tell the weakest that their lives are a burden and that they have no worth. Will we protect the most vulnerable among us, or will we further become a culture of death? This is a Decency Minute. Find us at AmericanDecency.org. I'm Bill Johnson.
Back in 07, my father passed away. My mother had passed away 7 years earlier, and they left me a small inheritance, and I wanted to give back to AFA for all they have done for me.
Carol talks about her experience with the AFA Foundation.
I am an avid listener to AFR, 12 hours a day, and I hear Dan Celia talking about the charitable gift annuity. I liked what the gift annuity offered, donated a certain amount, and from that, I get a check every month, which is retirement income for me.
If you'd like to support the work of the AFA and receive a fixed income for life, a charitable gift annuity from the AFA Foundation may just be what you're looking for. Learn more by contacting the Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Welcome to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along with us on this Wednesday afternoon. The website is TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. A lot happening in the city here in D.C. and in New York as the president-elect Donald Trump is meeting with advisors to start picking top cabinet members. We're going to be talking about some of those here in just a moment. One of the names being circulated for Secretary of State has some defense experts concerned. General Jerry Boykin's going to be with me a little bit later to talk about that. But first, we're seeing a lot of since Donald Trump's election, these protests in the streets of several major cities, protesters everywhere. Now, this is reported by the mainstream media as spontaneous uprisings. But are these angry citizens, voters? Well, we know that most of them aren't voters, but are they just angry citizens, or are they paid protesters? Well, here to talk about it is Penny Nance, CEO and president of Concerned Women for America. Penny, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me on, Tony. I appreciate it.
Well, new evidence suggests that the abortion giant Planned Parenthood and other liberal groups could be actually paying these protesters a pretty nice wage to get out there and be against President-elect Trump. What are you hearing?
You know, Tony, this is not surprising to me or to you. You know, you and I both have stood outside the Supreme Court and had Planned Parenthood's paid protesters screaming at us at the top of their lungs, because that's how they turn people out. And unfortunately, they're doing it with our tax dollars, because they receive, as you know, $500 million a year. Our tax dollars are up to 40% of their total income. And so there's this, this circle going on of them working to get elected liberals, and then liberals voting them more money of our tax dollars, and then them using it to lobby against us and to take down important pieces of legislation. And now we're seeing a new frontier, I think, of them really trying to disrupt our American system of government and calling into question our system of government, the legitimacy. And I believe this is just too far. This is more really fodder for our argument that we must shift the funding away from Planned Parenthood to community health centers that really do help women but don't do abortion.
Right. I mean, look, if you're going to get government money, I actually think if you get government money, you should not be able to lobby the government, mm-hmm. period.
Yeah.
Because...
Well, and there's all sorts of loopholes, even, you know, even the agencies. I mean, there really is the swamp. You know, I think Donald Trump said it right, and I believe it was maybe Bush that said it before him. We need to drain the swamp, and there is this effort that's going on, this collusion that's going on between the left and Planned Parenthood, and it's an attempt to disrupt this transition, that's a peaceful transition, and we need to really call it out for what it is. It's really paid protesters at a high level. We know that the unions and George Soros and MoveOn.org have been behind paying protesters for a very long time. I mean, who could, you know, you and I, again, we're out there with our volunteers from our organizations and, you know, Concerned Women for America members and FRC people and women holding signs and their babies and homemade signs, and yet we're surrounded all the time with Planned Parenthood protesters in printed shirts with extensive, you know, media operations with, you know, loud systems that we're overwhelmed by, because who could pay for that? And neither would, and we wouldn't even want to if we could.
Well, I mean, think about it, though. I mean, you know, you've got these people that are, these young people that are trapped in inner city failing schools, government schools, and this may be the only way they can make a living, is to be paid protesters for the left. In fact, what happened prior to the election, Craigslist had an ad, and it continues to be up. They continue to be hiring. Mm-hmm. It says, stop Trump, up to $1,500 a week, hiring immediately, call today, start tomorrow, $15 to $18 hourly rate plus bonus. I don't know what bonus. What do you get a bonus for? How many people you hit with your sign or what? Overtime, up to 77 hours per week. I mean.
Yeah, Boston, Denver, Columbus, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh. But you know, the, again,
and in Denver, it probably comes with it comes with a joint too, probably.
Yeah, they're all high in Denver. Yeah, no doubt. I mean, seriously though, we see these before. I mean, I have screenshots before every Supreme Court. We're out in front of the Supreme Court, talking to media and you know, rallying when there's these cases, these pro-life cases, they're up, and or if there's a marriage case, you know, we're there talking to media and advocating and making our position clear, because we have to be out there to counter. And it, we see this same Craigslist kind of you know, ad and this attempt to hire protesters and agitators every single time we do that.
Well, I mean, I guess their cause has lost so much momentum that they actually have to pay people to protest. I mean, that's one thing I like about our folks, especially the Baptists. You don't have to pay them to protest; they're right there on the spot.
No. We're so good, and you know, those homeschool moms that come out with their children and their babies and their strollers, like, you know, when you're with these are praying, kind, godly people who are just there because of what they believe. And I'm always so just grateful and humbled to get to stand alongside them. And, you know, I'll take our smaller number over their huge paid people any day.
Absolutely.
Because first off, God's on our side.
Absolutely. Penny Nance, thanks so much for being with us. It's always great to talk with you.
Thank you. God bless.
Uh-huh. Penny Nance, president of the Concerned Women for America. Hey, don't email me. I'm actually Baptist. I made that comment just in jest. Now, look, Penny's right. You know, we operate out of conviction. And the fact that we see what the injustices that go on, that we want to save the republic, and that's what people did. They turned out in vast numbers to campaign, to vote, to advocate for these values. And folks, that's going to have to continue, as we talked about before. This is just the starting line. It's not the finish line. It's just the start. And so, yeah, we're going to have to be very vocal and be engaged. And the reward is not a paycheck for protesting, but rather it's saving the republic for our children. That's the return we're going to get on the investment that we make of our time. All right, you're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. When we come back, Some names being floated for top positions in the cabinet have some security experts concerned, national security experts. I'm going to be talking with General Jerry Boykin when we return here on Washington Watch. So don't go away. We're back with more right after this.
Making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Well, certainly we have seen the U.S. markets have this Trump rally, a little bit unexpected, but nonetheless, it seems to continue. I think we may start to see a little bit of backing off from that as we head into the rest of the week and maybe early part of next week. But nonetheless, it looks like the Dow is now on pace after four straight record closings and seven straight trading days of a winning session. Certainly, this has been an incredible move in the markets. The dollar index this week hits a 13-year high. Currency very strong. Almost a certainty that the Federal Reserve, according to the St. Louis Fed president, that they will be raising rates in December. Now, I said that some weeks ago, that it would be inevitable that the Fed will likely, there's no political reason for them not to raise rates. They want to raise rates. They've been wanting to raise rates, and they will likely do so in December. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see it again early in the first quarter next year. But that looks like a certainty. And you know what? The markets are not reacting in any kind of negative way to that news. As a matter of fact, they're not even factoring it in. They don't care about it. They understand that the punch bowl that they've been so worried about being pulled away from the party is going away anyway under the Trump administration. And they're coming to the realization that there's a lot of other things to be happy about. And that would be primarily getting back to a real growth economy.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Wednesday afternoon. All right. Some names being floated for some key posts with the Trump administration. They've been up in the Trump Towers up there in New York going through a list. And folks, this is critical stuff because this is where the next 4 years are going to be shaped. All right, right now. And this is where I want to encourage you to be praying for those around. And they got some good people in this process, okay? Some really good people. But a lot of pressure. And I was talking to somebody today involved in the process, said, you know what? The people are coming out of the woodwork to look for positions. People who weren't necessarily supportive now are. But one name in particular has been floated out there for potential Secretary of State, it's been problematic because of some past performance issues here in Washington, D.C. And he's a senator. Senator Bob Corker of Tennessee, his name's apparently being floated for Secretary of State. And he was a key part of this bad Iran nuclear deal. And so it's got a lot of national security people concerned that to be Secretary of State when he had such bad judgment that has really basically set the stage for Obama and crew to do what they did on the Iran nuclear deal. Joining me now to talk about this is our own Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. General, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
You're becoming a regular here on the program.
I know.
Yeah.
Would you care to find anybody else?
I know. Well, that's what happens when you've got an office next to mine. Let's talk about Bob Corker, his role in basically bringing about what we have with this horrible Iran nuclear deal.
Yeah, Tony, let me read something to our audience here. It's Article 2, Section 2, Paragraph 2 of the United States Constitution. It says the president shall have power by and with the advice and consent of the Senate to make treaties, providing two-thirds of the senators present concur. That's in our Constitution. In other words, the president has the authority to make that treaty, but he has to have two-thirds of the senators concur with it. What Corker did, along with Senator Cardin out of Illinois, was he usurped the authority of the Constitution with the Corker-Cardin Amendment, because what that said was that before this deal could go forward, that they had to have the consent of the Senate, and the vote was 98-1. So you ask yourself, since it's already in the Constitution, why would you come up with an amendment like that that simply says that the president has to do what the Constitution already calls for? So either these two guys didn't know what's in the Constitution, which is highly unlikely, or they are part of this process of degrading the provisions of our Constitution. Either way, it gives me great concern for him being the Secretary of State when we've seen this kind of behavior in the past. And this thing, I want everybody to understand, this is not a treaty. What the president did was he called it a diplomatic agreement. And anybody that thinks the Iranians have ever signed anything are wrong. The Iranians have never signed anything that binds them to this. It's just a diplomatic agreement. But we lifted sanctions. We gave them $1.5 billion, about $1.7 billion, $450 million in cash in exchange for hostages there. So what Senator Corker has done here, I think, is a clear indication of what we could expect from him as a Secretary of State.
General, let me ask you this question. Had that Corker measure not passed, do you think we would have what we have today?
No,
did
I
that
think,
provide cover?
Well, yeah, it provided them cover for that. But I think that it would have drawn this thing out much longer and given more time for a review of what this was all about and more discussion about what we were going to expect of them and how this thing should actually be cobbled together.
As a
result of 98-1 voting
right.
for it. In fact, our good friend Ted Cruz voted for it. The only one that didn't vote for it was Tom Cotton.
What's interesting about this, Israel opposed to that deal. Remember, I was in the chamber when the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, came and spoke to a joint session of Congress. I don't know. I just think that would even strain potential relationships with Israel. Not that they're not strained now, but I mean, somebody who facilitated this bad nuclear deal to be Secretary of State,
right.
I think that could possibly send the wrong message.
Well, I think it certainly sends the wrong message to Israel, but Trump has taken a very firm stand. He's said very clearly he's going to roll back this deal with Iran. Now, that's not as easy to do as everybody thinks. Yeah. We could cancel it, but we'll never get our European allies to reinstitute sanctions because they've got a lot of investments in Iran right now.
Well, and we gave them all that money back, too. That's already been in. You're not going to get that back.
Yeah, well, you better say goodbye to that because that's not coming home anytime soon. But we could reinstitute unilateral sanctions.
But
the question is...
Yeah, but that takes forever to build back the pressure.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But our allies have... You know, they've opened the door now to European countries.
Well, yeah, absolutely, because they've got them. Hold on there, General. We're up against a break.
Okay.
Can you stick around?
I will, yeah.
All right, I'm going to make – I'll think about putting a little overtime in your pay, too. All right, folks, don't go away. The General's going to stick around. I hope you will as well. Then we're going to go to the phone lines here in just a moment. But important issue here, talking about some of the top cabinet picks. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Don't go away.
Hey, our Holy Land tour in March is filling up. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We only go one time a year to Israel, and that's in March. And our tour leaves the 9th and gets back on the 17th. And as I say, we don't have a whole lot of space left on this tour. So if you'd like to go with us and see the Holy Land, you need to give us a call at 800-FAMILIES, option 5, and we'll send you a brochure. 800 families with an S, option 5, and leave us your name and your address. We'll send you a brochure or go online at twholyland.com, twholyland.com. Again, we're going to Jerusalem and Bethlehem and Jericho and Nazareth and the Sea of Galilee and the Jordan River, all those places and much, much more. So join us on this very special tour of Israel in March.
You experienced a call to ministry later in life, and now you're in a second career. You like to call it your calling. You know you need more preparation, but how? Where? Hello, I'm John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi, where an online Master of Divinity degree can be tailor-made for you. Small class size, individual attention, learning opportunities that fit your busy schedule. Wesley Biblical Seminary, where we equip the called. WBS.edu.
Finish your boxes quickly. This year, we hope to bless 12 million children with American Family Radio and Operation Christmas Child.
At age of 12, 30 kids, we shared one bar of soap. Operation Christmas Child shoeboxes came to our orphanage. Most important to me, it had a bar of soap in it.
This is National Collection Week. Get more information at samaritanspurse.org/OCC. And thanks for partnering with American Family Radio to share the love of Christ through Operation Christmas Child.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber, president, co-founder of 8 Days of Hope. 8 Days of Hope was meant to be a one-time trip to Bay St. Louis, Waveland, Mississippi, after Hurricane Katrina. And then God got involved. And since then, we have been to 9 different states, rebuilt 1,700 homes, and it's all because we love Jesus. God tells us to love Him and love others. And that's what we do, either through 8 Days of Hope or a new ministry called Hope Reigns. Hope Reigns goes immediately after disaster, a tornado, a flood, a fire, a snowstorm. But what we notice with disasters is right after disaster, there's so many ministry opportunities. We've already been to New York, Illinois, Tennessee, Texas. So if someone's interested in 8 Days of Hope or Hope Reigns, the best place to go is our website, 8daysofhope.com. And even though we might not have an event planned the day you go to the website, if you give us your email address on our website, we'll be able to contact you about future events.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website is tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. And by the way, if you're on Twitter, each day I have a devotional tweet I put out every morning, just a quick devotional thought. If you'd like to get it, sign up, join me, follow me on Twitter. All right. Okay. We are talking about some of the top cabinet picks that President-elect Donald Trump and his team are making. You know, they're working on it, identifying different ones. Some of these names are just kind of being floated out there, others more legitimate than some. But one of the names apparently is fairly serious for Secretary of State is Tennessee Senator Bob Corker. Now, I would describe him as kind of a moderate on things. But the issue we were talking about, General Boykin is here with me talking about the Iran nuclear deal, which in many ways he facilitated by the legislation that he passed in the Senate.
Right.
Which, as you said, either would have drug it out longer until more facts came out to where it would have derailed the president and his efforts or may have stopped it altogether. But it's also a little puzzling to me that he was not a strong Trump supporter early on. And one thing I found about Trump that is I have to admire, okay, because it's something that I like. He's very loyal to people. Uh-huh. People who are loyal to him, he's loyal to them. But he's also, you know, forgiving, and he's welcomed other people back into the fold. But these are top spots where I would think you want somebody who's loyal in a top post in your cabinet.
Yes, Tony, and I think we need to understand our status in the world today. For the most part, our allies don't trust us and our enemies don't fear us. And that is largely a result of a very feckless foreign policy. We've turned our backs on our allies. You and I were talking about it earlier this morning. As after negotiating treaties for Arab missile defense systems in the Czech Republic and Poland for 3 years, They finally agreed to it, and then George W. Bush left, and Barack Obama came in and canceled
right.
those treaties
right.
with our NATO allies. That leaves us in a position where people ask, can we really be trusted? Japan and Korea have the same issue. And, of course, the Russians, because of our foreign policy, are exploiting every opportunity. They're exploiting the current situation. So you want a Secretary of State that's going to come in understanding that his first obligation is to the Constitution of the United States.
Right.
And in executing his duties, he has to follow the orders of the president. At the same time, given advice and counsel, but he has to follow the orders of the president. And I think this president has made it clear he wants to get rid of this Iran deal and roll back the yeah. clock on this.
It just doesn't make sense to have somebody who facilitated it actually being there at the
right.
Secretary of State. I mean, the other names that are out there that I think would be good, they have some value. Rudy Giuliani, now some originally thought maybe he would be at Department of Justice. Now, I will tell you, every time I saw Donald Trump since the, I don't know, going back quite a ways in this election cycle, Rudy Giuliani was with him. I mean,
right.
he has traveled with him. He has campaigned right. hard for him. He's been with him. And he's known for 9/11 and for cleaning up New York. So he's kind of no nonsense. To me, figures maybe he would be better as Attorney General, but I think there's some other people being considered for that spot. But I think he sends a yeah. tough signal as Secretary of State. Tom Bolton, another one, former
John Bolton.
I mean, he was UN ambassador or served in that capacity. He would be a good
yeah.
a good pick as Secretary of State.
Well, I think, first of all, Giuliani is a utility player.
Yeah.
Where do you need
Well, you
leadership?
Got the loyalty there. I mean, he's
That's right.
definitely loyal to Donald Trump.
Right.
Now, I've not agreed with him on all issues. And,
no.
You know, and on his domestic issues, I've never agreed with him. But I have a relationship with him. I think he's I admire him for his leadership that he put forth
right.
in New York. He certainly cleaned up New York as mayor.
Right.
It's kind of slipped backwards.
Yeah.
But he's got that no-nonsense leadership style.
Well, look, you could put – I mean, a guy like Giuliani, given his background and his experience both in government and out of government, he's had a pretty
yeah.
significant background
yeah.
since he got out of government. You could put him at the CIA. I mean, you
yeah,
know,
he
think
could go
about
almost
it.
Anywhere.
Bill Casey under Ronald Reagan, you know.
Yeah.
You could put him in a number of places, but I certainly would not – be apprehensive about him being the Secretary of State. So I think that, and John Bolton, people talk about John Bolton being too radical, that he has threatened to bomb Iran. You know, I think people need to put all that stuff in perspective and understand. John Bolton is an experienced diplomat that is probably one of the most cognitive
yeah.
People that you will see in terms of diplomacy.
Well, I mean, look, when you got somebody like that, and Giuliani's kind of in the same category, that has spent so much time in the media.
Yeah.
I mean, John Bolton is, I don't know, I mean, he's on almost every day, has
yes.
been. Anytime there's a national security
right.
issue or a foreign policy issue, he's on talking about it. He does it well. And, you know, I know this from doing media now for almost 20 years. I mean, if you're out there every day, under the lights, in the pressure, if you don't know what you're doing, eventually you're going to say something
right.
that doesn't
yeah.
come across. And he's not done that. I mean, he knows what he's talking about. I think he
That's
I
right.
think he would be a good pick too.
Well, and I go back and say, I think that the choice for Secretary of State has to send a very strong message to both our friends and our enemies. And we have to assure and reassure our friends that we're going to be faithful allies. And we have to let our enemies know that we're not going to put up with nonsense. We're not going to go into treaties like we did with Iran, which gave us nothing
right.
and gave them everything. And we're not going to allow you to run your ships up close to ours or buzz your airplanes close to ours. And I'm not advocating for war, but I am advocating for reestablishing America's status in the world. And the Secretary
right.
of State will be the first message that's sent to the world.
Well, it was Ronald Reagan's policy, peace through strength.
That's right.
You don't have to use it.
That's right.
I mean, you know, that's why you work out every day. So you know, you don't have to use.
Are we going to go down this road again now? I'll work out.
All right, I'll let you go to the gym there and get your workout in this afternoon there, General.
Now I'm up so upset, I've got to go find a safe space. And
that's right. Look, we got some of those. We got a petting zoo in the back there for the therapy.
That's where I'm headed right now.
All right. General Boykin, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, folks. I want to get your thoughts. Who do you think would make a good pick for Secretary of State? 866-372-7234. We're probably going to do a lot of this over the next week or so as some of these top spots are being filled. Any thoughts on who would like to see as the nation's top diplomat interfacing with foreign leaders in terms of American ideas and principles being advocated and articulated on the international scene? 866-372-7234. Give me a call. Let me know what you think. I think it's got to be someone who understands. We don't have time for on-the-job training. Now, this is one of the things with Donald Trump as a businessman. Now, he does not know all this stuff, okay? Now, I'm not saying he doesn't know anything about international affairs. He does do business internationally. But he needs a good seasoned team around him at the top. And again, I think talking about Senator Corker, I think, you know, he displayed poor judgment in how he basically facilitated Barack Obama and his administration setting up this Iran nuclear deal. So I think that disqualifies him. And again, I mean, I don't see any evidence of where he was helpful to Trump. All right, 866-372-7234. Who do you think would make a good Secretary of State? Let's go to the bluegrass state of Kentucky, where Frank is on the line. Frank, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi there, Tony. I've been listening to General Boykin for almost a little over a year now, I guess. And you might think it's a joke, but I'm not joking. I wish for him to be the Secretary of State. He's very, very, he just knows, he's very knowledgeable. And, it's not a joke when I'm saying this. And another thing, that the other person he was talking about who Trump might pick, that he was kind of skeptical about, don't you think that, if somebody should say something to Trump about that person that you were skeptical about, somebody should make some kind of noise about it instead of letting it go on and happen?
Right. I mean, there was concern about Bob Corker as a potential pick because of what has taken place in the Senate with the Iran nuclear deal. Now, we've talked about John Bolton as a possible pick. His name's being floated around. And also, as we mentioned, Rudy Giuliani, his name as well. Either one very capable. Frank, I'd have to say that I think General Boykin – I think he would be good as Secretary of Defense. He's got so much to add to our country, even Secretary of State. But I think he would be great as the head of our nation's military. Frank, so much. Thanks so much for the call. Appreciate you listening as always. All right, folks, I'm going to take a break here from the calls because I've got on the phone. I mentioned this at the top of the hour. We may be looking at another fight over religious liberty in our nation's military. Joining me now to talk about it is Oklahoma Congressman Steve Russell, who had an amendment to the National Defense Authorization Act that now the Democrats are rallying in opposition to, simply allowing those who contract with our nation's military to exercise religious freedom. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, and I really appreciate you keeping people up to date on it, Tony. And we need America, all across America, to pray. We don't wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers. And this is a case where we need to use the proper weaponry. The fight is still very much in play. They are trying to remove this. The implication is if they're allowed to turn this measure on defense contractors such as Catholic Charities, World Vision, others that have contracted, they can use the precedent to go after religious groups all across the country.
And so what this would do, so our listeners who may not have heard our previous conversation about this, you put an amendment on the military funding bill, that the NDAA is, which is called National Defense Authorization Act, which simply says contractors who contract with the Department of Defense do not have to check the tenets of their faith at the door in order to get the contract, correct?
Yes. The 1964 Civil Rights Act has those exceptions, the 1990 Americans with Disabilities Act, but unfortunately, President Obama in 2014 put in an executive order that made things very vague. They're using that as precedent to prohibit religious contractors from being eligible for contracts. So they're not forcing them to do one thing or the other. They're just saying you don't qualify to bid on a contract, which is religious discrimination. So my amendment codified that and said the law hasn't changed. They're still eligible. They've tried to turn it into something that it's not, an LGBTQ whatever type of issue. It doesn't prohibit anyone from contracting. It does prevent religious discrimination. We need Americans all across the country to send in their opinion on this. Please do not attack fellow Republicans. We are trying to fight for this issue, but it is worth noting that they really need to hear your encouragement on the issue, and also that Mr. Trump, President-elect Trump, also hear that you would like that Obama executive order, President Obama's executive order, overturned, because the law is already clear.
Right, and Congressman, I spoke to members of leadership this morning about this when I heard that it was in trouble, that it essentially the Senate Democrats have rallied against it and are trying to pull it out of the final bill.
Yes, they are. And
we have said that we will actually score against the when I say score, folks, it means that this is one of the votes that we will keep tallies of, because we think this is so important that we protect religious liberty that we'll score this vote. And so if people vote against religious liberty, then we're going to track that vote.
And we need to encourage President-elect Trump, even in the short term, just a nod from President-elect. He can say, hey, I got this. We're going to repeal this. The law is already clear, which it is. And that would take care of everything, whether they did a strip measure or not. The confusion was created by a vague executive order. It can be unconfused by the elimination of that executive order. So Mr. Trump could be a great aid to us and Vice President-elect Pence. So please encourage them to help us in this issue.
Absolutely. We will do, and we'll do that, and we'll encourage our folks to reach out to their members of Congress as well. Congressman Russell, thanks so much for taking time this afternoon to join us and bring us up to date.
Well, thank you for letting me squeak on. I just wanted to update you. We've been very busy.
I know you have. I'll let you get back to work. Congressman Steve Russell of Oklahoma. And folks, these are things worth fighting for. I mean, I'm all for the military. I support all of these things. But look, what he's talking about there is simply these organizations that contract with the Department of Defense, if they're a faith-based group, they're being denied a contract. That's wrong. Absolutely wrong. Hey, we're out of time. I want to thank you again for being with us. You can find out the latest by going to TonyPerkins.com. If you're not getting my daily update, a lot of this stuff is covered in that daily update. You can sign up at TonyPerkins.com. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.